Watch this.
Hello, my name is Jeff Goldblum, G-O-L-D-B-L-U-M. And I'm reading from some of the first name. Oh, yes, first name, I did it. First name, last name. Empty something. Yeah, and then pause. Here comes. That's enough of that. And I feel, and then it says here, parenthesis, however I feel. Well,
madness.
Madness. Hey, that's the last line of what movie? This is the, here, last line of movie. Madness. Tell me the movie.
Oh, my God. I know that movie. Yeah. I know that movie.
Is it an older movie?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Madness.
I can give you a clue.
Okay. Madness. Wait a minute. Is it...
Madness.
Hold it.
Madness.
Is it Apocalypse Now?
No. No, that's the horror.
The
horror. You're close, though.
Yeah.
And it has a similar...
Oh, wait, it's The Last Family Ties.
Oh.
No, it does. It ends with madness. Madness. Yeah. I love that this is the introduction to the show.
We have to wrap up what this movie is and then do the name thing. All is one giant piece. We're still rolling.
Yeah, we're still rolling.
But really? What, give us that hint. This has been real. You can't use this as
No, we can. But give us a hint on that movie.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. A lesser cast member, Jack Hawkins. Probably don't even know who that is.
Oh, Mike, what kind of clue is that?
Okay,
a ceramic mug features in a breakfast scene. There's a clue for you.
No, Jack Hawkins. There are those who know very well Jack Hawkins. And already know this movie. I'll give you a giveaway clue. Bill Holden. William Holden.
Oh,
Stalag 17?
No, pretty good guess. It's a kind of a war picture. He does not deliver the last line, by the way.
Oh, the Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Exactly, yes, right. Bridge Over the River Kwai.
That was my last.
Just as he blows up the bridge.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, all together, let's whistle the song that is right. Ready?
No.
Oh, wait,
no,
that's the wrong one.
Okay.
That's it.
I can't whistle, and I don't know that.
You cannot whistle?
I can't whistle, and
is that true?
I don't. I've never seen
when
this
I was
movie.
A kid in camp, we used to. They taught us these old songs from the 50s as we trudged up the Appalachian Mountains, and we had to sing Comet. It makes your teeth turn green, Comet. It tastes like Vaseline, Comet. Make you vomit, so drink your Comet and vomit today. And then it'd be like, again! Oh. And we would do it again, and I climbed the presidential mountain ranges singing that song, not knowing what it was, how it, why? Why? Just because. Wow.
And then you learned later that it was from that movie.
Yeah.
That's funny. Hey, do you know this song? You reminded me of the song, We're on the Upward Trail, We're on the Upward Trail. Singing, everybody singing as we go. That would have been a more legit version of the marching song.
Yes, I suppose. Now, where does that song come from? Because you've confused us once again.
And also, how do you feel about being Conan O'Brien's
friend? For God's sake.
My name is Jeff Goldblum, and I feel being here with you now as if I'm revealing myself to myself. And... And I feel utterly drenched and purged.
Okay.
Now, that's from a kind of an homage to a movie line also. That's not my originality and my unconventionality.
Why did you turn my podcast into a kooky trivia show?
I love it.
That's what you've done.
I love it.
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Ring the bell. Brand new shoes. Walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
All right, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, bumblebee, testing, all day long we sing the testing song. 3, 2, 1.
Why can't you do anything normally?
I don't know.
Why can't anything just be normal?
I don't know, ask Michelangelo. Here we go.
Oh,
3, 2,
there it is.
The Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, that's who I meant.
Okay.
The best of the Ninja Turtles. Right. 3.
No, Donatello, 2, big
one.
Time.
I'm a Leonardo guy.
Are you?
And action.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. The podcast that gives and gives until it can't give no more.
What's it giving?
I don't know.
What are we giving?
I think it's spreading disease.
We should stop.
It's spreading disease. This is a fantastic episode. I never say that up front, but we know for a fact because we bring to you today the amazing Jeff Goldblum, a force of nature, a star. And I don't mean a star in the sense of a Hollywood star. He certainly is that. But he is a celestial event, in my opinion.
He really is, yeah.
He really is. So this interview that we have, I'm told, Matt, that you barely touch this one. Sometimes you do little edits and tweaks.
I do.
There occasionally a guest will be on and they start to go into, you know, very inappropriate rant and we have to take it out.
Occasionally there's, you know, repeated stories or something through just natural conversation that I'll pull out. You're not missing anything as a listener from the things I'm pulling out.
Right.
But this one, it couldn't have any editing because it's music. It's a symphony. And I also always take out little mouth noises and clicks. But Jeff Goldblum has this repeating feline slurp.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, he does.
It's just, I couldn't touch it. It would be like going, like you said, going to Michelangelo and editing his Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. Well, again, so not Michelangelo, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
No, I still mean him.
Okay.
And he was a wonderful painter.
Because he also worked on the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
So it must be tough technically to edit a man who's constantly making low purring sounds.
You can't do
it. How do you can't do an edit. I speak and then I stop.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. But Jeff Goldblum, even when he's not speaking.
Well, you can do a crossfade and you can blend one sexual grumble into the next. Mm-hmm. But I would never do that. Like, who am I to censor his sexual rumblings, his subsonic sexual rumblings?
Yeah.
You know? I love that you called it, first of all, sexual grumblings, which made it sound like a grumpy guy who's in a sexual mood, you know? I don't even know how that sounds. Like, oh yeah, I'd like to do it with somebody right now. These kids today
have so much to do.
I have much to do, and I have to do the yard first. But I'd sure like to do it with someone.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means, but I'm. There's not much to say when you have Jeff Goldblum, and you've managed to capture a Jeff Goldblum in the wild, and you get it to talk. It's an event. It's a real event.
And to that point, this introduction is about the interview. The interview itself is something like, I think, 70 minutes long.
Mm.
And we do a segment at the end of this episode where we just talk about how wonderful that interview was. So this is an all Goldblum episode.
Yeah.
It really is.
And you know what? When I say all Goldblum, I don't hear one complaint.
No.
No one's going to stop me on the street and say that was too much Goldblum.
No.
And set your filters, your Goldblum filters to high. Because you want to get all the Goldblum as it comes to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it 70 minutes just the part where he goes, my name is Jeff Goldblum and I feel like that alone was
incredible.
Like
45 so the listeners
minutes.
Will have already heard that moment.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, 3 minutes and 46 seconds for him to say, hi, my name is Jeff Goldblum. And ultimately, I think he said, drenched something like
who knows,
drained and drenched.
All I know is that once it was over, I had no memory of what had happened. I knew that I had, had an orgasmic high, but I didn't know what happened.
Yeah.
And I think I put it out to the listeners. Listen to this Jeff Goldblum interview. And afterwards, I doubt anyone's going to know what was said.
I don't. You guys said so many names of shows and so many actors I had never heard of. And all three of you were like, oh my God, that guy was the best. Like, it was just like constant splooging over like 70s obscure shows. Okay. Come on. You were just doing a whole sex thing about grumblings.
Such a grumpy sexual guy.
And you're telling me to clean it up because
I
said splooge?
I didn't say splooge. I didn't talk about...
That's what you guys did all the whole interview.
It's true. I mean,
splooging.
She's just saying the facts. That's true. We did. Yeah.
Can you change that to squeegee in edit?
No.
So it just becomes squeegee? You guys were just squeegeeing each other. That, to me, feels erotic.
I didn't say each other. I said you were... Every time someone would say, oh yeah, do you remember this one actor who was in one show for 3 episodes? You were like, oh my God, that guy was the best guy I've ever heard of in my life. That's what I that's
who's
what I just
splooging
remember.
Around you that talks that way. I've never that's not what it's that didn't at all sound like a guy who was about to ejaculate. That in no way, your guy who's about to ejaculate's like, yeah, so anyway, I'm gonna go get a sandwich and oh my God, I just came. Who the fuck is that guy?
You've been hanging out with Bruno the Splooger?
Yeah.
I can't.
He just has orgasms when he least expects it.
Anyway, so I think what we're going to do is get a guy in here to rivet the beam. You need a good riveter because the rivets have to be hot too because they got to go into the I-beam. And, oh, oh, God. Oh, fuck.
Some people have narcolepsy. I got splugilepsy.
Oh, my, I got splugilepsy. Oh, I don't know. This year, I think the Mets are going to go all the way. I'll tell you what it is. It's infielding. If you can keep the ball in the infield. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
Oh, I had to take my earphones off.
Oh, fuck. I was talking about infielding. I thought I was safe.
Oh, Jesus.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
This guy.
Bruno the Splooge. You're listening to Bruno the Splooge on KXW9.
All right. Yeah. Well, anyway,
on that note,
let's do this. Let's do this thing. Strap yourselves in. My guest today is an actor who has starred in such movies as Jurassic Park, Independence Day, and Thor Ragnarok. Now he's reprising his role as Dr. Ian Malcolm in the highly anticipated movie Jurassic World Dominion. To say I'm excited is insane, because it's beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Delighted, excited, orgasmic. To chat with him today, Jeff Goldblum. Welcome. Lord, I have to tell you, this is the inaugural podcast in our new studio with a genuine celebrity. We did a little messing around and testing beforehand, but you...
Genuine. I like that pronunciation.
That's what I say.
You did Music Man at one point.
Oh, I wish I had. I know you did.
Genuine.
I know you
trumpet.
Did.
Yes, I know. Well, you know very well. You were in that movie. Yeah.
So listen, I must tell you that I can't think of a better person to start this off with than you. You know that you and I have something. A certain frisson. Admit it. Admit it. We have something.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
No, and I will.
A frisson. You know what that means.
I don't.
I think it's French, and it means we're in constant culmination.
The way you're moving.
Yeah. You're moving like a lascivious snake.
Yes. You bring it out in a minute.
No, you are. Interviewed you many times. You're one of my favorite people to talk to because you have a... an animalistic quality. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I mean that in the nicest way.
Which animal?
Well, I don't know. It would be a
panther?
Reptile, I believe.
I think a panther.
No. Because it has a long darting tongue. Oh. I know that he can hit a fly at great lengths. You're a combination of animals. You are a panther, but you are also a lizard. Of course, the fly. We must add the fly in there.
Yes. You just reminded me. Do you remember your dreams? I had a dream last night. I wrote down some of it, but I didn't remember until just this moment, this thing about the tongue. Somebody last night in my dream had a tongue that was very, very long, and it came out completely.
The tongue detached from the mouth?
It detached.
Completely?
It was a detachable long tongue. Yes. You know, apropos of nothing.
Well, first of all,
of interest to nobody, but that's true. And I have, forgot that. What the hell am I doing with that? Yes. I wrote these down madly before I forgot them this morning.
This is your dream.
Some of my dreams.
Okay, let me pause for a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Goldblum, esteemed actor, is about to, he's relayed a dream that he had last night.
Yeah.
And I can see that he's written it down. It looks like in Hebrew. I don't understand. Your handwriting is very bizarre.
Wow. Do you speak Hebrew?
It's very strange. It's
Yeah, it is. You can't read that. Dad was a doctor like your dad was. And
yeah, it's like Sanskrit. It's crazy.
I inherited his thing. No, but that's what I wrote down. That's right.
Should we hear it?
Yeah, should we hear the dream?
Yeah, you can. But I did just remember that, no kidding, that tongue part of it. That was also last night. There's nothing funny about these, but it may open a portal into our subconscious, all of us.
Let's hope so.
Robert Altman, you remember him.
Great director,
great
Robert Altman.
I worked with him a few times.
Sure. Name dropper?
Well, I know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
In any case, he appeared in my dream. We were kind of in a hospital situation or something, and he appeared all of a sudden, to my astonishment and delight, alive.
Right.
He's now dead, these several years. But he was alive, young and radiant, with his, I think they were his sons, and they were kind of sneaking him in and out of this thing. And I said, look at you, because he'd, I guess, I intuited right, I inferred right away, he'd he had faked his death for some reason. Yeah. He seemed sly and delighted, and it was now our secret. And he said, "Yes, be prepared for me to stay at your house," something like that. And then they left.
That was the dream.
That was one sequence. That's that sequence. The second sequence was, listen to this. I was in some kind of strange but heavy equipment pod that was delivering us up a mountain, off the outside of, to view a mountain. And it was the Alps. I think it was the Alps of some kind. Right. It's the Swiss Alps.
You're in some kind of craft viewing the Alps.
Yes. And each of us in a separate pod. My wife, Emily, was in a pod a little bit away from me. And we were all experiencing this separately. But we could see a wonderful view of these mountains as they got higher and higher. And it was like the highest peak on Earth. As we got further, we saw these old castles kind of, places, and that was amazing and wonderful. Then we got higher and higher until finally it kind of leveled out, and we knew we were at the top of the world. And it was amazing, and everybody was kind of, in awe. And then before it started down the other side, like a roller coaster, we were like that, and then it started, and it was a harrowing ride that seemed like that. I kind of retreated inside an inner compartment in this pod in kind of a bathroom. And then I said, I'm missing it. I thought to myself, I'm missing it. So I went back up and kind of got some of it. That was it. And then it was over. I missed my wife. I missed the group. And I seemed to be by myself, left behind somehow. Couldn't find them. So I was like left behind. That's the second part of the dream.
Okay.
Kind of.
Yes. Let me say quickly, Freud had this theory that dreams have meaning. And we now know that Freud was wrong.
That has no meaning.
This is insanity. There's nothing that opened portal. There's nothing there. Robert Altman returns from the dead and wants to stay at your home. And he's being sneaky and you're in a hospital. Then you're in a pod. You're observing the Alps. You go up one side and down the other after spending a brief interval in the bathroom. What's the last one?
The last one, this may make sense of the whole thing. I was doing kind of a talk show or a podcast of some kind. It's not curious to think
some
that
kind.
I
guess there are so many.
Thinking.
None would come to the mind of a Jeff Goldblum.
None like this. This is uniquely tippity-toppity. That's how it relates to the second one. This is the crest. This is the summit podcastery.
Thank you. Podcastery.
Yes.
We are the summit of podcastery, sir.
I was going to perform in some way or being asked to perform. I wasn't kind of prepared or happy about it. And then the woman producer type, laid on me some things that I wasn't prepared for. She said, you're going to be talking to Diane Keaton and Ron Howard, and we're going to try to get you to get him to dance. And I said, nothing's right. The microphone isn't right. The pen. I have nothing. There's nothing right. And how long am I going to do this? I said, I didn't know. She said, another couple hours. Well, that's altogether, that's 5 hours. That's two. That's, so it's, this is like a steady job. This is like a full-time job, right? Yeah, I think so. Well, okay. I was not happy about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. So you had a dream the night before coming here about doing a long podcast with a red-haired celebrity, Ron Howard, and Diane Keaton, aka Sonam Avsesian.
Avsesian. And then finally, I said, there was a guy with great big bushy eyebrows. Let's see if I'm prescient at all. No,
must be me. I mean, I trim them, but they could comb into my hairline if I needed them to.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, he was bad. And I said, what's your name? Yes. Well, I want to learn everybody's name first and last. He said, last. He was kind of, taken aback by that. And then I said, yes. And there was a big crew around. And I said, yes, I think I should learn everybody's name. In fact, I think if it were up to me, we'd all be wearing name tags. They seem to be happy about that. That's about all of that. That's that dream.
Now, listen.
Wow.
Don't lose that sheet of paper.
Okay.
Okay. We can't have that lost to time.
Okay.
We need to frame that.
Yeah. That is, here's what I'll say about you, Jeff. I never know what you're going to say. I never know what you're going to do. You are feral. You are a man that runs on instinct. You don't, and you're very much, I think, attuned. You should see the faces he's making right now. You're very much attuned to the universe, and I feel like you are constantly in the now. Is this correct?
I aspire to presence, and yes, I'd like to be, yeah. I'd like to be here and now. That would be great, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and you, that you've made a, you've devoted your life to the technology of the here and now, I believe. Isn't that also correct?
Well, I don't think I have at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
You do, so you don't deny it.
Okay, all right.
By the way, here, let me mention something. You know, there is such a thing as, you go to therapists and you've talked about dreams or interested in dreams, mm-hmm. but there's a thing called dream work. This may be of no interest to you, but there's a thing called dream work whereby this may not seem like it has any relevance to anything or makes any sense. But there are those who think, and I did it once with a good teacher, Sandra Seacat, that Laura Dern turned me on to, that you go to bed before the night of before you need an answer to something. You say, dear inner self, you write a letter, please give me an answer to something about this character that I'm playing or my life or aspect of this relationship. And you have a dream. And then you go to this dream coach and they go, and you go, well, here's what it is. I wrote it down. Doesn't seem to have anything to do with the play or bagaga. And they go, well, not at first, but how about this? And they open you up to consider the possibilities of how your subconscious may be informing your activities and your questions. What do you think of that?
My mother-in-law, a lovely woman and very smart woman, is a therapist. And Liza's mom. And she believes that all dreams have meaning. If you have a dream and you tell her, you know, she starts to pick it apart. I'm often having dreams that I defy anyone to make sense of because it just seems like random mush. Mm-hmm. It really does. It's just, and then I realize that most of my life I'm speaking in random mush.
Yes, exactly.
So maybe they're related.
Maybe they are related.
Yeah, and you get fertile material in your dream life or not. You know, I don't know about this. I'm not advocating for one. I don't know how I feel about it. If you tell me dreams are just a kind of a weird, discharge of your, nocturnal,
there are nocturnal discharges. That's a separate category.
yes.
Well, there are. They're just frankly are.
Come
I know there are. Yeah.
What's that?
Okay. I just don't know. Bring them up.
No.
I wasn't going to bring them up. I was just going to say it's a common term, nocturnal discharge. And I wanted to make sure that people didn't misunderstand what Jeff was saying. That you are separating the two.
Right.
Yes. Exactly. And if we were not on air, and I were more given to the ribald,
or ribald.
Oh,
I don't know.
What do you think?
Ribbled? Well, he said genuine.
Yeah, genuine.
I'm allowed to. I, as the host of the show, I'm allowed to
make up your own.
Make up the final laws on all pronunciations.
Really?
But please continue.
Well, I don't know. So, my point is that I'm not going to continue into something. The whole thing that I just thought of.
I'd love it if you would.
Yeah. Don't really be afraid of being ribald. We are all adults here. And and I will say this is a safe space.
Yeah.
All right. No, I shouldn't. Well, yes. When I was young, 12, 13, I think it happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I'll say. And
that seems young is all I'm going to say.
Really?
Yes.
What?
I was 37 for me for the first time.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yeah.
So awkward.
I was really watching them wrap up Seinfeld, and it happened. I'm sorry.
That's very good.
Late bloomer I am. You have.
Speak like Yoda.
Yeah, I know. Late bloomer I am.
Discharge late it came.
You know,
3,000 years old I was.
Seattle.
By the way, I'm such big fans of yours. I've been watching a lot of, not just for my conscientious research purposes, but just for my own entertainment. Often I go to YouTube and I've seen hours and hours and hours of your content.
Foolishness,
oh
I like to call
God.
It.
Everything.
Oh, that's nice. I love to think
love
of you
all.
Out there
so
watching
exciting.
It.
I really am. So I know.
You know what I think is something
you.
That makes me very happy is that none of our comedy was ever really about anything.
No, that's
so
for sure.
You can see something from 25 years ago and it doesn't relate to any specific topical thing in the news. Yeah. And other than the fact that my head hasn't rotted yet in those clips, people can laugh at them all over again, which makes me happy. happy. Uh-oh, you put on your specs.
He's examining and,
are you examining
head.
My rotting head?
Yeah, now that you brought it up, you all look great, you know, just great.
Well, please, you can tell that this... I have one of those Irish heads that bloats as it gets older.
You've said, I know.
No, this is true. You know, you leave a gourd in the sun long enough.
And then a Conan.
And then winter comes and you have yourself a Conan. That's what happens over time. But I will say this, I love talking to you because you're staring at me and you're examining
I like your glasses. I like your glasses.
You know why?
We had a conversation. I think I introduced you to these.
You did. I will admit freely that
nice
my
thing.
Style guru and my lifestyle guru is Mr. Jeff Goldberg.
Yep. How can it not be?
And I'll tell you why. He is a tall, good-looking drink of water. And whenever he's wearing something, I think, well, wait a minute. We have somewhat similar. Well, hold on.
Okay.
Sona's about to really correct me. Let's say Jeff had been in an accident at some point. Then Jeff and I would be very similar. That's all I'm saying.
You guys have very different vibes.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the vibes. Okay. I'm talking just about when he is a tall man and he knows how to dress.
Right.
And I love, so during commercial breaks, often when he was on the show, people always wonder, what do you talk about with people? I can always tell you what I'm talking about with Jeff in a commercial break. I go right to, oh my God, those shoes, and you know, I have large feet, and you have large feet, and he'll say, oh my boy, yes. Well. And then, so I remembered once you came out, and you were wearing these wonderful glasses that you really carried off well, and I said, I must wear those glasses.
Yeah.
And I asked you, and you acted as if you were telling me where the secret ring was that would unlock the universe. You went, oh my boy, yes, Jacques-Marie. What is it? Jacques-Marie Mage. Oh, and he said, oh, my boy, I'll call ahead. And then you described going downtown and there's a secret knock and a corridor and a passageway. And sure enough, they're the greatest glasses.
Did you go? How'd you get them? Did you go to see Jerome?
I went with Sona.
Yeah.
Sona came
You went
with
to
me.
Jerome, to that studio? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm sure he greeted you and met you and showed you everything.
Oh, he was wonderful. Everybody was wonderful.
But I mean, I have done this several times. You once, we were doing something together that was not my project and not your project. We were recording something together.
I remember the day.
And you walked in, and I could never find jeans. I have a very... unusual build, I'll say. And
what's your inseam? What's your leg? We have a long leg. You have a fine leg, I think. What's your inseam?
I have a very long leg.
We'll say it together. Ready? Here's our inseam. 1, 2, 3. 36.
I'm a 36.
Wait, 36. What just happened? Is it really?
You said you were a 30.
Well, I was afraid. I was afraid to go. I have a long inseam, and so So anyway, I see this gentleman come in and he's wearing these amazing jeans. And I said, oh my God, Jeff, where'd you get those jeans? He went, oh my boy.
Oh my boy.
He said it. Oh, good. Oh. And he went, oh my boy, you simply must. And then you said, I'll never forget. You said, the Schaefer Garment Hotel.
That's right.
What?
And it's this Robert place.
Schaefer.
Yeah. You said, the Schaefer Garment Hotel. And I go there and you said, just go. So I go. And of course, it's the coolest people in the world. And they have like an old denim machine.
What?
Yeah. And
it's like the John Wick Hotel, but for clothes.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's the John Wick Hotel, except just for jeans.
Oh, my.
And how about the hat maker in the back?
Oh, there's a guy there wearing like Slash's hat, and he's like, I'll make you one of these. And I went, well, I don't know if I can carry that off. There's a dog that's in the store.
Yeah, that's right. Do you know who I ran into there once? I was with Emily. We went there to pick up a pair of jeans or a hat or something, and it was just us and Bob Dylan.
Oh, my God.
Yes, because he got his hats from that guy.
Oh.
I saw him out of the corner of my eye. I had important business. I was talking about hat, and he came in, and before I could say anything to him, he left. But I think Emily, I don't know if she said anything.
Wait,
either.
You didn't go up to him?
No. I wish I had. Bob Dylan.
I mean, I've told this before, but I met him once.
Oh.
I got pushed to the front of I went to see some concert of his and I was backstage and someone pushed me to the front of a line and there he was, the great Bob Dylan. And it's my one chance to meet him. And all of his conversation stopped and Bob Dylan looked at me and he went,
I know you from the TV.
That's true. Yeah. It's true. The TV. He said, I know you from the TV. And just then, the other person backstage was Vice President Al Gore. And so all I hear is, I know you from the TV. And then I hear, Conan, it's me, Al Gore. And I'm like, what?
What is this event?
And I go, what? Yeah. We're all there for a concert to see Bob Dylan perform. And he goes like, I love rock and roll, you know. And suddenly he's talking to me and I see Bob Dylan scuttle away. I was cock blocked with Bob Dylan by Vice President Al Gore. That's a true story.
If you had told me that that wasn't a true story, but that was a dream you had last night, it would be just as credible.
Yeah, and then, trust me, I wanted to detach Gore's tongue from his body to get him to stop yapping at me. All due respect to the former vice president and, of course, a leading figure in climate prevention change.
Just another nocturnal emission happening.
Yeah. You know what? He does this to me. Jeff Goldblum does this to me. Unmans me.
Yeah. You're just bewitching, and this is joyous.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I'm around you, look at him take a sip.
Isn't it really something? Everything
he does is perfection.
Yeah. Yes.
You just went to take a sip, and it's like there's a golden liquid in there, but I know it's just something... Okay. Looks like ginger ale or rum. I don't know.
No, it's green tea that they made for me here. Yeah. But I know how you despise iced drinks.
I've heard every episode.
I don't know if we should be excited or horrified that you're coming.
You know our deepest, darkest.
I know everything. Foibles.
I have to say.
We're terrible people.
Jeff, you know, we really are an awful lot.
You can do better than us, Jeff.
You know what? You can sip any day because everything you...
Listen. Yeah, listen to that.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That is Jeff Goldblum sipping.
That's right.
Oh, my God. You're the best. You know what's interesting to me? There's a sensuality that you exude about, see, even with the smallest gestures, a sensuality. And then I find, and I'm quite comfortable in my sexuality, but I find that when I'm around you, I'm open for anything. I really am. Yeah. I am. I'm just saying, I feel the same. And Matt is as well. We're just up for
it. I'd like to offer myself as a sacrifice in some way.
Wait, you mean like if Jeff invited you to like a weird sex party, you'd be like,
You know how uptight I am,
yes,
right?
That's why
Jeff Goldblum said, come with me into this special sanctum and I want you to introduce you to my secret friends and it's going to be, but first you must apply this wax and oil. I would do it. I would do it because he's that.
And it's going to be Diane Keaton, Ron Howard, and Robert Altman.
And Bob Dylan and Al Gore.
Bob Dylan's going to see me and go, I know you from the TV.
And I'm going to know you in a whole different way.
And then I'm just about to get it on with Bob Dylan when I get to hear Conan. It's me, Vice President Al Gore.
Very erotic.
Yeah.
Well, this little packet that we're in, don't you love this? Is this the first
time? Yeah.
Well, I love this blue velvet purse that we're in. You know,
it's like a sex panic room.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
I don't know. Sex panic?
With microphones.
Have you ever been in a sex panic?
It's a sex. I have been in a sex panic myself.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem. That's why I envy you. Is I don't think Jeff would ever be in a sex panic. Jeff Goldblum would never be in a sex panic. No. I am in a constant, even when there's nothing sexual happening, I'm in a sex panic. I'm constantly in my own head.
Well, he's the antidote because he could be a sex bomb to your sex panic.
Sex bomb. Sex bomb. Who did that song? Sex bomb. It wasn't bomb, but it was bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Was it
B-52s?
No, it was a big hit in Europe, particularly during these couple of years that I remember. Sex bomb. Sex bomb.
You only remember a couple of years?
We got it coming.
No, during these couple of... This, when it was a hit, he's looking it up. When it was a hit, I was in Europe making a movie, and it was on all the time, but I don't think it made its way across the pond.
I know that. Sex bomb.
And there was a video. I'll give you a clue. That same singer is not unusual.
Oh, Tom Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Tom Jones,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. What James Bond...
Thunderball.
You have a James Bond question.
And they call it thunderbolt. And they strikes like thunderball.
Do you know that Johnny Cash did a rejected Thunderball theme song?
Did I didn't not know that.
That's true. I didn't know
he did, unsolicited, sent it to them, and they went, "We never asked for this."
It was not that song. It was his own song.
You know,
song.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
And this is to be, because I know a lot about Johnny Cash. I revere him.
Yeah.
He sent in a lot of unsolicited songs. He was constantly sending in like Prel shampoo, Alpo dog food. He was constantly sending in, "I've got a different way you could go with that song." Purina Cat Chow.
I believed you for a second. I feel really dumb.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're kidding.
You know the best part of waking up is lifting in your cup. You know that's sent
to
Johnny Cash first sent it in. He did it in that Johnny Cash way.
Yeah, he first sang that song, you know, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp, ring a burning fire.
Ring a bomb, down, burn, ring a fire.
I'm stuck on Band-Aids.
Because Band-Aids stuck on me. He did the Oscar Mayer song.
My
baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. Oh, and you know what? I mean.
No. Wasn't the Oscar
You know what? The sad.
No,
last
no,
thing he did
no.
before he passed away was the Car
no,
for Kids jingle.
No. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I don't know that jingle.
Oh, sing it.
Is it 1-800-CARS for kids? Something like that.
Oh, that.
Okay, yeah.
No, but I think the Oscar Mayer thing was, I'd like to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. Oh, I'd like to be an Oscar Mayer wiener.
I'd like to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I'd really like to be.
Yeah.
I'd like to be an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Now all the kids would be in love with me.
Yes.
I fell into a burning ring of fire.
Yeah. Just so you know, to be fair, that most jingles that you love were written by Johnny Cash.
That's true.
Unsolicited. He would just send them in.
But he did do the Thunderball. This is how we got started.
Yeah.
Dropping mental breadcrumbs. He did send in the Thunderball, you say.
And it sounds like a typical Johnny Cash song, except it has kind of like John Barry horns in it.
Mm.
It's really something.
Yeah. I love that Thunderball. I was right at the right age for that, because I had consumed Dr. No from Rush with Love, Goldfinger. Yeah. I was so ready for Thunderball.
Yeah.
Boy, that was great.
Is he your favorite Bond of all time?
I'm
going to say, for me, it's Sean Connery, but Daniel Craig right there with him. And I thought no one could do that.
Yeah.
I thought no one could.
Yeah.
Sean Connery was so incredible.
Fantastic. When he peaked, when he went to the summit of the Alps, after Thunderball, I think, nothing against Sean Connery, those movies, it started to...
He was phoning it in a bit.
Wither, yeah. And by the time he got to Jill St. John and
Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Forever. Yeah, you know, not my favorite.
I've never been happier in my life right now.
I know. This is right up your alley.
I'll tell you, Matt Gourley is a Bond fanatic and a huge Jeff Goldblum fan.
Yeah.
Now he's in a room, they've both come together, and he's having a nocturnal emission.
Oh my God, there's so many emissions happening.
A diurnal emission all day long here. This is
What?
Yeah.
The what?
Diurnal.
Diurnal. Is that the daytime?
The
diurnal?
I believe so.
Diurnal. I believe I know that song. Johnny Cash first sent that in.
Okay, listen. You have.
Yes. He submitted all my bar mitzvah song.
Oh, yeah. You know what makes perfect.
I fell into a burning ring of.
It's becoming more Elvis. It's becoming more Elvis than Johnny Cash.
I never said I was the perfect.
Oh my God!
You know, you are a terrific jazz musician, and I'm bringing this up for a reason. I think to understand Jeff Goldblum, which is impossible, but to really understand what makes this man tick, I think is your love of jazz. You are constantly improvising in the moment and tuned into that crazy galaxy that real jazz musicians are tuned into. And a good friend of mine just went and saw you perform the other night and said that you were fantastic.
Really?
Yes.
Very nice. That's very encouraging. Thank you. Yeah, we played the Disney Concert Hall.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, a couple of nights ago. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, am I correct that there's something about music, I just feel like you're in tune with some jazz musical score all the time.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think that's, and this is a compliment, by the way.
Thank you so much. I like, well, I aspire to it. I'm a humble student of jazz and of the technology of presence in all its various ramifications in the podcast world, in the jazz world, in the musical world, and everything. Oh, I had thought, by the way, aren't there, hasn't anybody sung songs, a snippet of song about friendship? As you're still looking for friends. By the way, how many friends do you need? You've been looking for, how long have you been looking for friends now? How many have you found by this time?
Well, zero.
Jeff, they don't often take. That's the problem.
Oh.
I am, I don't wear well over time. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, but I feel that we are, you know, sometimes plants, they have to graft. They have to graft into each other is what you're saying.
Yes, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I think we have...
We need to graft into each other.
Yes, we need to very, very much. Yeah, but think of, do you know any songs about friendship?
Well, the song that, you know, We Are Gonna Be Friends, that White Stripes did, Jack White. He's a good friend of mine, and that's the song I
name
wanted.
Name dropper.
He wrote the song, he wrote the song with Jeff Altman.
Jeff Altman.
Robert Altman, sorry.
Oh.
Anyway, fall is here, hear the yell.
You sing like a nightingale. I love your voice. When you know, when you're not,
you really like
when
my
you're
voice?
When you're not doing that, you have a beautiful, authentic, conversational, delightful voice.
Can I say something?
You must.
I'm always so self-conscious that I put trills and foolishness in there.
But you
and
just
I never just sing.
You just sang, and I loved it.
Yeah. Silent night.
No, he's gonna do a thing.
Oh, is that
you're gonna do a thing?
Holy night. All is calm.
Yeah, he's doing
no, it's
thing.
Doing it again, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
doing
take,
it again.
All is pride.
Try to take all the
can't do it.
The vibrato out of it.
Sleep.
No, yeah, no.
I mean, you can't be normal.
No, but you were just singing. So sing that, whatever you want to sing, like the other voice, that's it.
Let's see.
You've got a friend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I can't sing that song.
How about the Jason Isbell song you sang to us that time?
How's that go? It goes, never could be happy in the city at night.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't see the stars for the neon lights.
Beautiful.
Sidewalks dirty and the river's worse. Underground trains all run in reverse. Nobody here can dance like me. Everybody claps on the one and the three. Am I the last of my kind? Am I the last of my kind? That's the song.
Very moving, very beautiful. Nice. Boy, you should do a whole album of songs that way. I'd love to hear you do that.
I can't do it.
I can't do it.
I just want to say you two are just locked in eye contact.
I know. But can I tell you something?
Can I tell you something, Jeff?
I couldn't. And I'm supposed to, and I want to write a song with Amy Mann.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Amy Mann.
About it. I adore Amy Mann, I'm intimidated by Amy Mann's talent. Mm-hmm. But we promised to write a song together. And then the last thing she said to me, I said, yeah, I'll do it. And she said, you know, it's just got to be something like sincere and something that you really want to say. And I was like, that's not going to happen.
You could do it.
No, I can't.
Sona, will you tell them, please?
I was
over.
On the edge of my seat the entire time you were singing because I thought he was going to go into some bit and like do something with your voice.
Things eventually become a bit.
It's a bit. You're like joking around.
Well, who knows where it will be consumed or how it should be presented, but just for your own, just do it. I'd love to hear, just for me.
Me too.
And for Sona and for us, I'd love to hear you do it. And you don't have to jettison your... comedic force of nature. You could be surprising and do one like that and one like that and one like that. But that's a very useful part of your toolbox, in my opinion, and a very enjoyable one.
That's very nice. I'm curious about something because we have so much in common, not just our incredible height and physiques, not just our successful, incredibly successful careers, both of us as actors. My point is that we both, and you mentioned this earlier, both of us, both of our fathers, doctors.
Yes, right. Mm.
And I don't know, there's this couple of similarities there. I'm fascinated by this idea that sometimes a salmon just knows it has to swim upstream. I don't know why, but somehow you knew when you were a kid,
a kid
that you needed to be an actor, you needed to be a performer.
Yep. I did. Around 10, you know, we started to go to children's theater. And I was like, what are they doing? Who is that? What are they doing backstage? And I'd be very excited, you know, to go. And then around 9th and 10th grades, I went to this summer session of Carnegie Mellon University and took real blue lessons. But before that, yes, I went to Chatham Music Day Camp around 5th grade and was in this show. And my dad had said, if you ever find something you love to do, that maybe is a key to your vocational choice wisely. And that night they said, so how'd you like that? And I was like, yeah, I liked it. But I kept it secret because there was no, you know, and I kept it secret. I wanted to be an actor. And certainly in school, I was a well-behaved good boy and nobody would have thought that I would do anything like that, except that I played piano here and there. So that was it. Yeah. And he was a doctor. But I must say, I don't know.
What kind of doctor, by the way?
Internal medicine, kind of a family doctor. You know?
Got it.
But, you know, people, his patients loved him and he would always kind of keep up on his studies and this and that. And, he liked medicine. But early on, supposedly the story goes, when he wanted to decide what he was going to do, he was either going to be a doctor or an actor. Oh, he had the idea to be an actor. And then he stuck his head in the back of a class and thought to himself, this is out of my league, whatever that meant. So he was a doctor. But so he was a little bit tickled when I.
Of course.
Yeah.
Did he? And he got to see you become Jeff Goldblum, the big deal.
Yeah, well, not such a big deal, not even a big deal now. But he got to see me start to, because things started to happen quickly. He died like in 83, around the time I did The Big Chill. But he saw a few movies before that and some plays. And I remember I did a play called City Sugar where I was the lead. I was a radio guy in England with an English accent, a Stephen Polyakov play called City Sugar. And I did it at this off-Broadway show. He went to see, when he came backstage, and he was not like this, he was burst into tears threw his arms around me.
Wow.
Yeah, like that. I know.
Well, I can't relate. anyway.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I just realized something that's, speaking of when you knew you wanted to do something, when I was a very young boy, my dad took me to downtown LA because that's where he used to work. First celebrity sighting was something being shot. A warehouse door opens up, outruns Ben Vereen, and then outruns Jeff Goldblum shooting 10 Speed and Brown.
Okay, and I was going to bring this up, that the first time we met, TV was our life preserver when we were kids. And my brothers, Neil and Luke, and I were really into what's the new show? And we're constantly looking for what's the new show going to be. And it was a big deal back then. Now people are bombarded with TV and streaming all the time. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, it was a big deal. Like ABC is coming out with its lineup in the fall, and all summer you'd be excited. You'd hear rumors about what it was going to be, and CBS is coming out with this, and NBC is coming out with that. And there was this show that we heard about called 10 Speed and Brown Shoe, and my brothers and I watched it, and it starred Ben Vereen and this guy I'd never heard of before named Jeff Goldblum, and it was fucking fantastic.
So good.
It was so good. Yeah. And I was like, who is that guy? Who's that guy? That guy's fantastic. And then the show didn't last.
13 episodes is all. Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Bring it back.
And
Stephen J. Cannell did it, who had done Rockford Files and many other things.
But I remember.
Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, I'm walking on air. Good. Yep.
Please don't ask me to sing that one.
William Catt. Johnny Cash first sent that in. I'm walking on air.
So but it's funny that it's so funny that you bring that up, Matt, because that is the first time that I met Jeff Goldblum. I'm using your full name just out of reverence. It would have been a couple of years into the late night show that I met you, and you've done everything. You'd have been in so many great movies, and I went back into your dressing room and I was like, 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. And I remembered you were like, oh yeah, 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. Because I thought you might say, oh, well, who cares about that? You know, I've moved on to so many other things. But it was such, it really tickled me when I was how old would I have been? 14, 15?
Well, it was like 1980, I think. So you were born in?
I was 16, 17.
Oh, so I was 7 when I saw you guys shooting that. And I just was baffled by the cameras and that you did it multiple times and going, why are they doing it again and again? Why
really? Like you were, how did you wind up there? What, where?
My dad worked downtown and he would take me to downtown quite a bit. Downtown LA.
What did he do, your dad?
He was a division manager for the gas company.
Oh, I see.
Well, so he also sold drugs.
He major kingpin.
So downtown, no kidding. And you just happened upon us shooting. No kidding.
And I was just blown away.
I remember, you know, it's so funny when you think about these brushes with show business. As we said earlier, I was so far removed from, you know, show business in my childhood. And then I'll never forget, my father came home one day and he said, they're shooting a movie at my hospital, the Peter Brent Brigham Hospital, which is now Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. It's a big hospital. And he said, they're shooting a scene right outside my office. And we were like, they're shooting a movie in Boston near my dad's, like right outside my dad's office? That's impossible. That can't be. And so we rushed over there and it was a scene where actor James Coburn just has to walk out and open a car door and get in it and shut the door. And and he walked out, they go, and action. And so James Coburn walks up and he walks up to the car and it won't open and it won't open. And they go, cut. The car has been, someone had locked it with the keys inside. So then we watch James Coburn just stand there while seven guys crowd around and start with a coat hanger trying to open the door. And I got to find out the name of this movie because I guess you can watch it.
What year would this have been?
This would have been like 1971 or 72.
We could look that up. We could find out.
And lift up the door and they couldn't get it. And I thought, this is movie making?
Wow, yeah.
What the hell is this?
Well, still, one is struck by that when you go to, you know, some movie and there's, you know, all the little things going on. Hey, I love James Coburn. You know, I saw the first run of Our Man Flint.
Oh my God.
In Like Flint.
Oh, we're back.
Yeah.
Oh,
do you remember how the telephone rang in Lee J. Cobb's office?
I have no idea.
Okay,
this was
kind of almost a takeoff on James Bond, but not really. I mean, it was very silly.
Derek Flint.
Yeah,
and then Austin Power had kind of borrowed some things like that.
James Coburn movie? I've got to find that.
Let me guess. After that, I think after that he did a movie called The President's Analyst. Could have been that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember him talking about it on talk shows. I used to love talk shows when I was in Pittsburgh. I used to tune into in summer, stay home all day and watch the Mike Douglas show.
Mike Douglas
to, you know, Dinah Shore and Merv Griffin. And he used to come on. Remember, he was kind of a countercultural hippie actor then. And he used to come on with a turtleneck, you know, or in a medallion or something like that. And his act, he used to come on, not just talk, he wanted to play the gong. And he used to bring onto Carson a big, big gong and go, that was his act, you know.
We had, you know what I love, in the tradition of, just to let people know that we did our best during my late night run to keep the madness going. You talked about, you know, how people would just do strange things. One of the stranger things we did once was we just put out a salt lick on my show to see if we could attract a celebrity. And then you did it so nicely out of nowhere, just Jeff just in the corner, but he does it sort of like a nervous
deer.
And he slowly approaches and I'm like, looks like Jeff Goldblum. Shh, everyone be quiet. And he came out and then he like sniffed the salt lick and then you took a little lick. I remember that being one of my favorite. I don't care. So James Coburn played the gong with Carson. Let's see you have Jeff Goldblum.
What do we got for Coburn?
Coburn is the Carrie treatment. Carrie Treatment is a 1972 American crime thriller film by Blake Edwards, baseball.
Yes.
It takes place in Boston.
In Boston.
Dr. Peter Carey, played by James Coburn, is a pathologist who moves to Boston where he starts working.
Okay, well,
I don't know it, but Blake Edwards, boy.
Well, guess what? So this is another fun story. My dad's there. This wasn't happening when I was there. They kept shooting this right outside my dad's window, and he kept thinking, well, I could keep looking under this microscope for a cure to a terrible disease, or I could go outside and hang out with these movie folk. So he went outside and he's chatting and he can't believe it, but Blake Edwards is there with his wife, Julie Andrews.
Yes.
And a friend of my dad's who doesn't know much because he's always looking in a microscope is talking to Blake Edwards, and then he turned to Julie Andrews and said,
the friend of your dad's.
The friend of my dad's, and said, now tell me, miss, what do you do?
Oh no.
And she said, well, I'm, an actress as well. And he went, well, and then later on, people told him what he did. And the guy, I think, put his head in a cyclotron.
Oh, it's like that scene from Notting Hill when, Julia Roberts comes in.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant's.
I know that reference. Yes.
Notting Hill.
There you go. We're getting closer and closer to her reference.
And then when you said Julie Andrews, I was like, yeah, she narrated Bridgerton. So I know her.
And you know what?
Well,
oh, my God.
Sound of Music. Oh, Sound of Music.
I'm kidding.
You know, when the Thanksgiving Day Parade, when I lived in New York, we lived on the Upper West Side, and my kids were crazy about seeing, the parade go by. And so I'd always take them. They were little kids to see the parade. And once I'm watching on the television, and we haven't gone down yet, and the parade is going by, and then they said, and here comes Julie Andrews. I lost my fucking mind. I'm at the time, I'm a 46-year-old man. I ran without my kids.
Oh, my God.
And I ran all the way down. They were like, where are you going? I was like, ah! And I ran because I wanted to get down there fast. And I saw her go by and I was like, it's Julie Andrews. And I've been on TV at this point, 12 years. And I'm like, Julie Andrews. I mean, she didn't see me,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. How about the movie 10? She's in the movie 10, of course, too. But Sound of Music, I saw when it first came out. It was a big deal around that year. And I showed it to our kids now. We showed Sound of Music. We haven't shown them many movies. I'm going to show them. They've never been to a movie theater, but I think I'm going to take them to see Jurassic World.
Your kids are
seven, almost seven, and just turned five.
Oh my God. Okay. So they're at such a great age. And because of COVID, they've missed out on some of these great experiences. Like going to a movie theater is so, that was the biggest thing in the world that could happen to me, was to get to go to a movie theater and see a movie.
Really?
Yeah. And so when I say to, anyone in my family now, hey, do you want to go see a movie? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. What are you talking about? It's because they can see anything they want at any time.
Right. Oh, yeah. Going to a movie theater. I'm involved in this cycle of publicity for Jurassic Park Dominion. And one of the things we're encouraging people to do, genuinely on my part, is to go out and see it in the movies, of course. And I made a list because of that. I thought, what are the best times I've ever had in movie theaters in my life? Because it's that's a way to talk about it. And so I started to remember, and with the help of my sister, too, all the movies I saw importantly when I was a kid. And she said, remember this one. And it's been a nostalgia blast.
So these are the movies that really blew you away.
Yes. These are the ones we remember. She and I used to go to, they used to drop us off to the Leona Theater, this big, beautiful jewel box of a three-tiered movie palace.
In Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm. West Homestead, a suburb of Pittsburgh, not downtown, a little suburb, but they had this movie theater, and we'd go for, 25 cents, 50 cents or something, whatever tickets were, get popcorn with butter and salt and hot dogs.
So Jeff Goldblum is about to read a list of his favorite movies. This is heaven.
The ones that made a big difference that I can remember to this day.
Let's hear it.
Okay, we saw, see if any of these mean anything to you. The Absent-Minded Professor.
Yes.
Fred McMurray, Flubber, all that. Yep. That made a big impression on me. The Blob.
The original.
Which I've seen recently. Steve McQueen, very good. His first movie, now, who was, of course, you'll know who was in all of these movies, which we saw, we saw whatever that came to there. But during this period, the 60s, early 60s, The Bellboy, Cinderfella, Disorderly Orderly, Visitor, Small
Lewis.
Planet, Geisha Boy.
Of course,
Boy,
The Nutty Professor.
Delinquent, Rockabye, Baby, Nutty Professor. Yeah. Loved it. Then I got the chance to meet him. Did you ever meet Jerry?
I did. I got to meet him. I got to interview him.
That's so interesting. Well, we could talk all about that.
Well, did you meet Jerry Lewis?
Yes, I did. I was going to play his son in that last movie that he did, Augie Rose. Augie Rose?
Max Rose.
Max Rose. And so I went to Vegas in order. I was almost going to do it before I got something else and couldn't. So I hung out with him in his office in Las Vegas.
How was
and
he?
And bonded. Amazing. We could talk for, amazing. He'd made a big, he was big in my childhood and during this period. So
massive star, yeah.
Thrilled to meet him. And he was, as you know him at that stage, great, great and complicated. And
very
complicated.
Yeah.
Right. But those movies, when we were seeing those movies, big deal. Do you know what this movie is? The Sterile Cuckoo?
No.
Liza Minnelli's first movie. She plays a kind of a nerdy girl.
The Sterile Cuckoo.
Sterile Cuckoo, who's coming
terrible of age. Terrible name for a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
Nobody wants to. Sterility is never something that draws the masses.
Yeah.
No.
Come on, come on, bring the family. The sterile cuckoo.
Yeah.
That cuckoo's not having children.
How about this movie? Who knows this? You, I don't think you will. Georgie Girl.
Oh yeah.
We hey almost there, named our daughter.
Georgie Girl.
Walking down the street, so fancy free, was played by
Redgrave.
Lynn Redgrave, yep. Whom I worked with later, believe it or not. Oh, well, Bridge on the River Kwai. We saw the first viewing of The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yes.
I love that. No. Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. Mm-hmm. How about, Betty Davis and Joan Crawford together? Gay Paree, P-U-R-E-E, about an animated movie about, in an impressionistic style, French impressionist, about cats. And I think Robert Goulet did a voice, Dr. No from Russia with Love, Goldfinger, fantastic, Our Man Flint. I have Pink Panther, the first Pink Panther.
Now we went to a movie theater,
and there was Peter Sellers, never seen before, as Clouseau, Blake Edwards, unbelievable. I remember the day we saw that.
Those movies changed my life.
Bobby D and I went, my best friend went to that theater to see Psycho, first time of Psycho. Unbelievable. And I just spent some time with Jamie Lee Curtis in CinemaCon,
What's so great about, they don't do it anymore, but there were these great promotional tricks that they did back in the day to get people to come see movies. And Alfred Hitchcock was a genius at this. Yeah. So when Psycho came out, he had like ambulances outside the theaters, and he very much publicized, we're going to have medical personnel available for people who faint or have seizures during this terrifying movie. And, people went mad for it.
And there was like a do not be late for this one. Remember,
he won't let you in after the first.
Yeah, we won't let you in. Do not tell your friends
what
happened. Exactly. Yeah. And he did all that stuff. He did it with the birds. He had all these great, what a great showman he was, in addition to being, this incredible
Birds
auteur.
Was another movie we saw first run. Loved that day that we saw that. But then we went, I had a crush on this girl. And I went on a field trip hoping to kind of be near her. I had not made any headway. And we saw Hard Day's Night.
What girl did you have a crush on?
Stephanie Ignatz.
Oh, I thought you said, okay. I thought you meant
no,
you had a crush on a girl in the movie.
Those were fellas.
They just had long hair.
In ninth grade. Stephanie. And she was going, so I was going to tag along too.
Have you ever kept up with Stephanie Ignatz?
We have her here today.
Here she is.
A little bit.
Oh my God, look out. She's deranged.
Some 10 or 15 years after this period, we got in touch and we saw each other. She went out to California and... I saw her.
Okay. You saw her, but she didn't see you. Followed her from a distance.
Oh, no. Not like that.
They saw each other.
Oh, okay.
He closes the deal.
Wasn't like that. Yeah. No.
He understands.
I'm making it clear. What I do is I look them up, and then I just I peer at them through shrubbery from 50 yards away.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's my... I saw her,
that's
what I mean.
Norman Bates. Speaking of Norman Bates.
Yeah, I know.
Through a hole in your office wall.
Yes. He's got them all over this building. It's horrible.
I have to ask you, speaking of movies, we have to talk about, because in Jurassic Park, and this character that you played, Dr. Ian, what's the last
name?
Malcolm, that's right.
Malcolm.
Yes. You nailed that character so much. And now you're coming back and you're assembling with the same people to bring these people back to life.
Yes, sir.
So who else is with you in this? Is Laura Dern?
Laura Dern, of course. The great Laura Dern, the great Sam Neill. Mm-hmm. So the three of us from the first movie are back together for the first time since then.
Right.
And we're reunited and have something to do with in this story with Bryce Dallas Howard's character and Chris Pratt's character. But also B.D. Wong is back from the first one. And Omar.
That's great.
Yeah, isn't that great? And Omar Sy from most recently. And Daniela Pineda and Justice Smith, and wait a minute. And new characters, DeWanda Wise, Mamadou Ache, and Campbell Scott are in this. Yeah, Isabel Sermon comes back. It's great.
This is something that I think would be worthwhile for you to settle with for a second, is that movies were such a big deal for you growing up. Mm. You've now been in a bunch of movies, and you think about Jurassic Park, so many young people – that was an eye-opening experience for them, and you were a big part of it.
Yeah.
it's interesting how the loop closes in a strange way, isn't it? Well, it's fascinating.
I know. It's a dreamy life that I've had. I can't believe it. I'm very grateful. And it's amazing that I get a chance to be in some movies with people, like I've said, that I saw early on. It is amazing.
That is something, and I brought this up before, but also I've had a dreamy life and getting the chance to just, to me, getting to interact with someone I saw on a movie screen or a television set when I was a child, nothing tops that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are all these massive stars that come along later on in life and it doesn't have the same effect as meeting someone like a Dick Van Dyke or meeting someone who was in a movie and a huge deal when you were a kid, like Jerry Lewis, you know, or you know, seeing a Julie Andrews on a parade float go by, and even though she's 50 yards away, I can't believe that. Oh wait, I saw you there as a child, and now you're still here. Yeah. Life is magic.
Amazing. Vincent Price, we saw some Vincent Price movies. Then I did, he was in The Fly, the first Fly, which I saw back then.
Oh,
I think I saw him in a Ralph's later.
You know. God.
You saw Vincent Price at a Ralph's?
I do believe so. I think I went up to him and he said, yes, yes. He was, you know, picking out melons or something or from Turkey. Yeah, he was a big chef, you know.
God.
Yeah. It's too bad Bill Hader isn't here because Bill Hader does the best Vincent Price of all, and he'd be going, you know, I don't do it, but he'd be here doing Vincent Price at a Ralph's.
We should remind him of that.
Yeah.
You know, we should do. We will be seeing him soon. Yeah. We should remind him of that because Vincent Price at a Ralph's, and I used to, you know, when I first moved out here to LA a long time ago in 1988. My brother Neil came out and visited me, and there was a Ralph's across the street, and he kept seeing all these huge stars. He saw Cesar Romero.
Oh.
The Joker.
And
he'd come back and he'd go, I saw him. And I'm like, what is he? He was buying dog food at Ralph's. He was always going to Ralph's and he would hang out there and he would go right up to them and go, I loved you as the Joker, or I saw Harry Morgan from MASH. And and then he would always tell me what they were buying, you know? He was buying a giant thing of beans, you know? It always never matched. Like, I saw Cher. What was she getting? Industrial strength toilet cleaner.
She would never.
She would never.
I was so crazy about the fry. I hadn't met anybody famous or who was in movies when I was a kid. And the first couple of brushes I had, we went to on a vacation, and who was staying at this hotel was Darren McGavin.
Oh my God.
Great.
Of the Night Stalker.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, do you think we'll see him at breakfast? I never went up to him, but I was just, when are we going to see him again? You know.
He's the dad
In Christmas Story.
Oh,
he's the dad.
He is? Yeah.
But he's also one of the great. He's also in The Natural.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's one of the villains in The Natural.
He's got one fun guy in that.
He did, I think, maybe my favorite show as a kid.
Oh, Kolchak.
He played Carl Kolchak in The Night Stalker, which was the scariest show on television. It only ran, maybe it ran two seasons, if that. It was not a success. But it was such a scary show.
I have that on DVD.
Do you? No, it's fantastic.
So
it's fantastic.
I've never seen them. I don't know.
And Darren McGavin was fantastic. And I got to, I don't think he ever did my show, but I got to meet him once. And my soul left my body. I was so excited. I couldn't believe I was meeting him.
Unbelievable. So, I'm back in this movie now. And Coming out June 10th.
That's
you brought it up.
That's your promo. I love that you went, back in this movie and, June 10th, you brought it up. I love that.
I was just trying to remember where we got off that.
Yeah.
But next on my list was Diary of a Madman, Vincent Price, and Tomb of Ligeia. He was a big deal to us. You know, some of those Roger Cormans. I was a teenage Frankenstein. I was a teenage werewolf. They're two horrible movies, but interesting. Ego.
Did anyone ever do I Was a Teenager? I'm just curious.
Come
it would
on.
Be kind of meta, but I'd do it.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a billion dollars.
It's a teenager
idea.
Who then turns into a teenager who's just slightly older.
He's like 15 and he turns 17.
He turns into a 16-year-old.
Oh, okay.
He's a 15-year-old and he goes in a corner. It's like, ah! And then he comes out and he's a 16-year-old.
He can legally drive but doesn't know how to.
Yeah, he can legally drive but he can't. But he has the same amount of acne.
What a terrible movie.
I think it's a great movie and I've got the rights.
Okay, no one's going to fight you.
Yeah, well, you
can have him.
I remember when TV shows would come out, what you were talking about, when you know the new lineup. Boy, I loved Friday nights when Wild Wild West would come on.
Yes, huge.
Oh, boy. Robert Conrad and Ross Martin, who played...
Yep. Ross Martin, damn it.
Artemis Gordon.
Artemis Gordon.
Right. Yeah, him.
King Kong versus...
We left that open for you, so I know, take it.
What, really? What?
No, I don't know.
How about Zhigo? Nobody knows the movie Zhigo.
I don't know.
Jackie Gleason. He plays a mute dead, kind of a village idiot. Oh, it's great. First movie I ever cried at.
Oh, I get it.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah.
I'm crying hearing about it. Yeah. That's you're mentioning a bunch of movies that had a huge impact that I don't know.
You'll know this one. Jason and the Argonauts.
Mm. Yes.
All that Ray Harryhausen stop motion stuff.
Yeah.
Magical day. Vertigo. Did see the first run of Vertigo. Maybe my favorite Hitchcock movie. Speaking of Hitchcock, you know Vertigo?
I don't. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Bernard Herrmann does the score. Wonderful music from that. But why don't you like Vertigo?
I didn't say I didn't like it. Yeah. I just of the Hitchcock films.
What's your favorite Hitchcock?
It's got to be Psycho. And I also like Strangers on a Train.
Oh,
and
that's yesteryear. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
Farley Granger was in that. I met Farley Granger.
You can't just say a name twice and have it have more impact.
Yes, you can.
Farley Granger.
I think he's proven that he can.
You know, it'd be great if you. I think you'd be a great prosecuting attorney because you'd say, you know, the killer is of course Steve Miller. Steve Miller, and people would be like, well, he's got to be guilty. He said his name twice.
Steve Miller from the band?
Yeah. Well, I just threw a name out there.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a common name.
He's not suspicious in any way.
He's the gangster of love. He's got to be guilty.
Oh, God.
That's true.
God.
That's true.
I stand by that.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. What were we talking about? Whose name?
You were listing.
What? Oh, Farley Granger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who introduced me to Farley Granger? Shelley Winters, whom I met on this movie called Next Stop Greenwich Village that Paul Mazursky had directed in 1975. I came out here and we were kind of palsy. Shelley Winters.
Lovely woman. She was lovely.
Wow. What did
she was on our show in the early years and I loved her because I knew her mostly from Poseidon Adventure.
Oh. I know that one.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, you know, she was in the Poseidon Adventure, but she was also in Lolita. She's great.
Yes. She's great in Lolita.
She's great in Place in the Sun with Montgomery Clifton and Liz Taylor. Spectacular. Hey, did you ever meet Liz Taylor?
I did not meet Liz Taylor. No.
I knew Liz Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was she like?
Spectacular. Spectacular.
Okay. She was one of those people. There's a It all depends on when you get into show business. And I, you know, you need to get in at the – I missed – you know, I shouldn't say that. I got to meet all these amazing people who then passed away. It makes me sound like a killer. I met them and then they were gone. Suspicious, eh? But before that – but I will say that, you know, there are all these great stars that passed away, you know, before I came along in 93. And you think of – you know, all the great – so many great stars from the – she had not passed away but refused to take my calls, Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah. Right.
Wisely, very smart. Wisely.
Don't blame her.
No.
Right. Who were you talking – Shelley Winters, who was in Place in the Sun.
Yeah.
And also, what did she win the Oscar for as supporting actress, as they were called in those days? What did she win for? She won for –
why did you become an evil German scientist?
What did she win for? You will tell us, but she won – you will not leave until you tell us what Shirley Winters won for supporting actress. Eitischau Schlitten, Reinschlag, Lottenstein, Schlittenblatt.
What was it?
Very good. Patch of Blue.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Patch of Blue with Elizabeth Hartman and Sidney Poitier.
And the prisoner says, Patch of Blue, and he goes,
okay, you can go.
You're the first.
I'm putting that down because
you can go. Here is, did you park in our lot? Because we validate.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, well,
Hogan.
The guy completely loses his fervor. Patch of Blue. Oh, okay.
So you go out the way you came. There's like, you know, oh, God. Just take the elevator.
I'm crying.
Do you want me to validate that?
Very good. Yeah, I'm adding Patch of Blue because I'd forgotten it, because we saw Lilies of the Field and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, all in the Sidney Poitier category. In any case, so Shelley Winters took me to Musso and Frank's for the first time.
Oh my God, that is the ultimate experience.
Her and Farley Granger.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. She said, get the sand dabs. Sand dabs are, they're known for their sand dabs. Nobody else serves sand dabs. You know what the is fish sand dabs?
Sand dab.
At Musso Frank's, you can get the sand dabs.
What
still.
Is it?
A fish. Kind of a fish.
Kind of fish that you get. Okay. Yeah. It's been fried often.
Fried. The fried sand dabs, kind of a sole of a variation of sole, I do believe.
Wow. Mm. I just, those, I mean, I live for those experiences. I live for the idea that you would see an iconic star in a restaurant and you would end up hanging out with them. You know, someone you grew up watching on TV. And yeah. I was at some restaurant once and Warren Beatty was at another table. And the next thing you know, I got invited over and I'm sitting with Warren Beatty. And Bonnie and Clyde was such a huge deal to me.
I saw it first run with my
family. Yeah. And then I'm sitting there with him and I just can't believe it. I'm supposed to play it cool. But then you can't because it's too big a moment. Amazing. Just too big.
Totally amazing. Splendor in the Grass. Even before Bonnie and Clyde, my parents and I went to – we were in New York City. And I think we went to Radio City Music Hall, saw the Rockettes, and saw Splendor in the Grass with him and I think maybe Natalie Wood.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
I saw the Rockettes, but I was 50 yards away. I was in shrubbery.
Oh, God.
Just peering out.
Oh, God.
Such a creep.
Up in the catwalk. I'm the only guy that watches the Rockettes from a distance. Peering
you
through
know,
bushes.
You can buy a ticket and be first
row.
Yeah.
Like, no, I have my own way. I like to do it.
Doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. I got to wait till all of them come out together into that field, and I'll be behind those shrubs over there. What? How are you going to get them all out here? Well, we have a salt lick. It'll get them out there.
Salt lick.
You lit up.
Look, I have to wrap this up.
No, you mustn't. I beg you.
No. I beg you.
He had a dream. He expects a five-hour podcast. We can do this. It's okay.
Okay, we'll do it. We all need to be rehydrated. No, I just want to – it's – my God. I want to get the word out. And because this podcast – I'm not going to brag. You can brag. A lot of people hear this podcast.
Oh, 43 million, yeah. I believe, is the viewership. Is the what?
Don't in Hawaii alone. And so what I'm saying, that's just on Maui.
Everybody listens million. Five times on that.
Yeah, I read 43 million.
You had a very successful podcast. Yeah, it's not for me to
good
say.
Let's not fact check that. It's 43 million.
It's just say, yeah, no reason to look into it. Total? But the point is, a lot of people hear it. And so when I say Jurassic World Dominion, Jurassic World Dominion is coming out, that you are reprising your role as Dr. Ian Malcolm, that is going to pack the theaters alone.
That's
big.
No one else would watch it otherwise.
I appreciate you saying that. Because that's what they've sent me. That's what I'm representing. You know, I represent a lovely company of investors and people.
All right, let's not
actors.
Turn this into a money thing. Right?
Emotionally they're invested. Colin Trevorrow, the director. Steven Spielberg is still at the top of the pyramid. Yes, wow. Godfathering this all
the
way through.
Let's be honest. You are the butts and seats of this movie.
Yeah.
I'm people sorry. I'm just going to say it. Yeah. That's how I felt. And as much as everyone else was spectacular, you and one of the dinosaurs really... I can't remember which one. It's one of the Velociraptors.
It
would be great if you got everybody back except one Velociraptor held out. It's like, fuck it.
The Robert Duvall.
Yeah,
I was going to say Robert Duvall. Yeah. Godfather 3.
Yeah, like,
that's
fuck
right.
it. You meet my price or I'm not showing up.
That's right.
Can I just take a second to share my notes for this this episode of the podcast?
Yes. Perfection, erotic ideal.
Yep.
Wow.
That was just what today was.
There we go. That really was.
Yeah. We should do. We have many more hours of.
You know, you have
fun
to come. You have to come back because my time with you is serious. I'm going to be sincere, and it's hard for me to do that. But you're one of my favorite people. You really are.
You too, me.
And I just absolutely love talking to you. And it is whenever we're together, whether it's been on the show or this podcast, it is unlike any other experience I have. And it means a lot to me. And so when I heard that you were going to come in and inaugurate our new studio, my head blew up. It exploded.
Well, me too. I've been looking forward to this terrifically. And these are my favorite. These are peak experiences for me. And people come up to me on the street anecdotally and say, you on Conan, you and Conan, you and Conan.
See, we got to do something.
They do. Well, I think so, too.
I've been screen tested and apparently it's not good. It won't be a film, but maybe an animated project. Something where my face is mostly hidden.
And you're singing authentically a lot. I like that. And I just saw a documentary about, or some kind of thing about talk show, the history of talk shows and the current. Yeah. Did you see this one? There are many of them.
I don't watch those.
I love them all. Yeah. And this one particularly said, here's why amongst the current crop in the last few decades, Conan O'Brien reigns supreme. He's cracked the code, and why he's at the pinnacle of what this needs to be right now, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yep. Well,
I saw it. And
I'm not uncomfortable. Okay. I just don't believe that exists.
They're talking about this Conan O'Brien?
No, he makes a
it's an Irish. It's an Irish Conan O'Brien.
This guy makes a very good case for exactly why. It's a very erudite and...
There is a guy named Conrad O'Ryan in Dublin who's huge, and he's really cracked the code.
That's very cool.
Well, it's true. Nice. It's true.
Well, Jeff...
And you all together. I mean, I'm really starstruck with all of you.
Oh, come on.
Stop it.
Jeff Goldblum.
You pronounced my name right.
I there should be a perfume, not Obsession, but Movsession.
Yes.
I'm wearing the new Movsession.
My God, it's going to smell like garlic.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And Gorley. And Gorley. Is it, how do you say, what's that vowel exactly? Is it?
Gore.
Gore, like Gorley. Gore, like Gore.
Gorley.
Gorley.
Yeah, although when I went to Ireland, they said it's girly.
Ah, curly.
Is it really? Yeah.
Well, they were just saying, you seem kind of girly.
Yeah, I think so.
You seem girly to me. Yeah.
I said it's girly because, no, it's girly.
Oh, trust me. We saw you walking down the street, and it was girly.
Well, you three have made me very, very happy for many hours, and will continue to be.
You have delighted us, and you're coming back.
I want you. I want you, along with, I've seen every single Schlansky.
Oh, my God.
Every single Schlansky.
Boo.
Really? Really?
No,
I laugh out loud over and over again. I see them multiple times.
No, and it's all true. That's the one thing. I've been in the darkest regions, darkest, most remote corners of the world, and people will literally come out from behind a rock and say, Schlansky, is he being real?
I know.
I'll go, yes, he's being real. And then they go back under the rock.
You're never funnier when he's driving you mad. It's just great.
Oh, my God.
Great. Well, anyway.
Gotta get him back.
I could go on.
Mr. Goldblum, Mr. Sir. Jeff Goldblum, you're the finest man that ever lived.
Conan Christopher O'Brien.
Oh, my God.
Yes, you are the finest man. That's ever lived.
No, all right. You're better.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're better.
I'm taking you to a sizzler. Yeah. We're going.
Let's go. Langustino. Langustinos.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, God.
We have to just take a second here and wallow in the joyousness of Jeff Goldblum. And we never do this. We talk to the guests, then we move on with matters. But Jeff Goldblum came in here. He is an energy field. He is calming, but also enervating at the same time. He electrifies, solidifies. There's no compromise. I have real nice thighs. He's incredible. He does it. He's one of my. I gotta say. And I was really looking forward to seeing him today, and then to see how happy he was to see you, God. Matt Gorley, and you, Sonam Obsession. He knew you as people. He
as
didn't
human beings.
A lot of celebrities, they come in and they're like, oh my God, it's Conan. It's Conan. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And
never heard that. Yeah, I've never heard anybody say, oh my God, it's Conan.
I keep trying to get them to say it.
I know.
I have a cue card I hold up.
I think Cato Kaelin was the only one.
Cato Kaelin said it. Yeah. But he was testifying.
That's not funny.
Please, murder. When time passes, murders are okay.
Okay.
To laugh about. Anyway, my point is that, he saw me as a human being, not as some godlike creature. And and he was so thrilled to see you guys as well.
Oh, man. He's a human electrolyte. He just gives you energy, like you were saying. And we know that he listens to all these segments and stuff. So this is as much for him. We loved him.
Jeff, we absolutely love you. We know that he listens to the podcast So unless he's an incredible con artist who paid someone to listen, because he said, I can't listen to that crap. No. He unless he paid someone to listen and take notes.
Put a test in there. Jeff, if you're listening this, to prove it, come over to my house and watch some James Bond movies with me.
Oh, what? Matt, that got sad quick.
Yeah. Just please come over.
Yeah, I know. Okay, that's better.
Do you have friends?
Oh, God, no.
You don't?
No, not a one.
That just occurred to me. I don't know if you have friends and you have people that you podcast with and you shuttle from place to place. Podcasting with people you may not really know well on a human level, but do you have friends that come over and do the things that you like to do?
Yeah, I'm a human being.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I've never heard you reference
a
friend.
Do you really think he didn't have any
friends? I don't know.
Friends?
You know that I have friends.
Well, now Jeff Goldblum's my friend, so I do have a friend.
Oh, well, now I'm not sure either.
Huh? You're not sure? Yeah. Jeff, come on, let's prove these knuckleheads wrong.
Your friends are all people you saw on TV and movie when you were kids in your mind.
I'm E.T.
Yeah, last night I had dinner with Gumby. Gumby?
This is supposed to be a Jeff Goldblum praise session.
Yeah, okay, that's well, true. I love him so much.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to know who we are, you know what's interesting? Matt, and he does. That says a lot about
him. Let me ask you a question. Ladies love that man.
Love him.
And I understand because, you know, again, we have a similar frame.
Okay, don't do that. Don't do that.
I don't understand.
Before you go down that
road.
No,
but when I don't understand.
Said, like,
no,
yeah.
I can handle it. I can handle it. Why is it that the there's a fork in the
confidence.
Road?
Confidence. Swagger.
Yeah.
Ease.
You know how, like, at a time, Porsche and Volkswagen had the same engine?
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference we're talking
it's,
about.
It's also, it's like,
no, I can
chill.
Handle it. I really want to know.
He is a chill person who seems very comfortable in his skin and very confident. Not that you're not, but it seems like he's been that way much longer than you have. I feel
no,
like
and
you
I'm,
went through a very like I'm awkward phase where you were like, ugh, I don't like myself.
No.
Was that,
No, but what I'm saying is that it does amaze me that he does have something that I wish I had that I don't have.
Oh, me too.
You know, and I'm being completely honest. He does have an ease, and he's always in the center. He's always centered. Mm-hmm. I think that's incredible to be centered like that all the time. And he's like a tuning fork that's perfectly vibrating with the universe.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a, you know, like a...
You're just a fork.
Yeah, like a fork that was eating clams, but someone didn't wash it afterwards, and then it fell in some sand. And it's got some clam juice and sand on it.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Do you think we like him because he's nice to us?
Oh,
maybe
right.
If you tried being nice to me and Matt, then we would like... Mom, maybe still not
you
then.
You get a paycheck, right?
That's not being nice to someone. That's,
you got a paycheck.
I'm your employee. That doesn't mean you're nice to me.
It's kind of worse because it's like you're paying her to be belligerent.
The fact that you even thought
about
it.
Do you do okay with me?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Would you say that, I mean, are there a lot of other people just sending you money besides me?
Nobody else is.
Okay.
Then
I'm a good guy and I'm your friend.
No, you can't. No, that doesn't sound how nice this works.
It's not transactional.
What are you talking about?
Jeff Goldblum asks nothing and gives everything. You are
do you get a paycheck from you?
Why are you pointing at me?
You profit from me as well.
In a roundabout way, I do, yes.
In a roundabout way.
Full disclosure.
Okay, I didn't realize you were just here on a voluntary basis. No, I've seen you driving. Since the podcast blew up and suddenly you're driving a Bentley.
No.
Yes, you're driving a Bentley on, just on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
You know.
Classic
and,
girls.
Yeah. And whoa, your license plate suddenly Pod King. And you're driving around. You guys have both.
Pod King is seven letters.
Yeah.
We
and your kids wear these like crazy satin outfits that you have handmade for them now that the podcast blew up. And so both of you have, your lives have been changed by knowing me, which means
oh
you
God.
Have to like me.
That,
you have
no,
to.
You know no. That's not how it works.
It should work that way.
You can't buy friendship.
That's not
yes,
how it works.
Yes, you can.
No, you can.
That's why I moved to Los Angeles.
But
you can.
No.
You can.
Sonia and I are
do you think
friends.
Yeah,
all
of my friends.
I genuinely like
me. All of my friends work for me. And I'm very comfortable with that because if any of them piss me off, I can terminate that friendship very easily.
And you wonder why we like Jeff Goldblum more than you.
I still don't understand
He's my favorite tall person.
Yeah.
And he just exudes this like sense of ease. And you know what? He doesn't have to pay me for me to like him.
Yeah.
And that says a lot.
Hmm. This is interesting. I have to look more into this.
Into friendship? Into the concept of being nice?
He leads with love. You lead with fear.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Stalin did that.
Yeah, I know.
He controlled.
Stalin. Joseph Stalin.
Oh,
dictator.
Oh, so now we're going to rip on Joseph Stalin. You know, I love how there's no sacred cows anymore. Everybody gets torn down.
Jeff Goldblum.
And now it's Joseph Stalin.
Jeff Goldblum.
Jesus, no one's safe in this hypersensitive
era. Jeff Goldblum is. He's an angel. Yeah. He's an absolute angel. He's just such a sweet person.
He might be an alien.
We should stick the landing on this. He is he's an unusual person. There's no one else quite like him. And I do have to tell you that when I, in my travels, people always bring up to me, oh my God, I love it when Jeff Goldblum is on the podcast or he's on the show. He brings an energy that immediately transforms the experience. I think we all are changed by him when we're in his, he creates like a biosphere. A Jeff Goldblum biosphere that's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he remembers everybody. Yeah. When he looks at you, he looks at you and he knows your name and he remembers you. And that goes a long way.
Yeah, but I don't, again, I have a list of all the employees. I can consult.
I don't think you
can go to Jeff Ross. I can go to Jeff Ross now. I don't need to.
All I have to do
is go to Jeff Ross or Adam Sachs and say, the guy with the, you know, he's kind of a hipster and he lives in Pasadena. And they'll be like, yeah, Matt Gourley. And I'll be like, yeah. Anyway, tell him I wished him a happy Christmas. I got to get out of here. My helicopter's waiting.
It's May. Wait, what?
Yeah.
My helicopter's waiting.
That's your helicopter.
God, your helicopter is ill.
Yeah.
How does the helicopter...
No, but mine is different. Mine runs on pure malice. It's very eco-friendly.
It's also super pervy somehow. Your helicopter is...
Wow. Oh. Mr. O'Brien, you must really hate people today. We've got 600,000 miles. I just get in it and put an electrode on my head.
Flies.
Who are you mad at? And it leaves a noxious cloud of just pure bad intent behind me.
Metaphorically, that's what's going on here. Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, Jeff Goldblum, if you're listening right now,
yes.
Naked in the lotus position as you meditate, as he does every night,
okay.
We love you.
We do.
We love you.
See you next week. At my house for James Bond.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Let's cut it there.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.